very nice poetry, even if we don't understand the meaning of it, the sound. It's very beautifully formed. The castle was fully equipped with all necessary paraphernalia, and it was pleasing in all seasons. It was decorated all around with flags, festoons, and artistic work of variegated colors. It was further embellished with wreaths of charming flowers that attracted sweetly humming bees, and with tapestries of linen, silk, and various other fabrics. Text 16. Upariopari vinyasta nilayeshu prithak prithak kshiptai kashipubhi kantam pariyanka vyajanasanai. Translation: the palace looked charming with beds, couches, fans, and seats, all separately arranged in seven stories. Purport: it is understood from this verse that the castle had many stories. The words upari upari vinyasta indicate that skyscrapers are not newly invented. Even in those days, millions of years ago, the idea of building many storied houses was current. They contained not merely one or two rooms, but many different apartments, and each was completely decorated with cushions, bedsteads, sitting places, and carpets. Is anyone surprised upon hearing this description and this purport? You're not surprised. Well, the average reader, of course the average reader wouldn't be reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 23, Text 16. The average reader doesn't read the Srimad Bhagavatam. I hope the average devotees are reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. It used to be a standard within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness that its members read Prabhupada's books, but nowadays it seems to be more like optional. So, those who have read this far have got used to all kinds of things like flying castles, which, according to European folklore, would be just that, folklore, some kind of story that people used to believe in. Dragons and witches. Of course, in the modern West, they still believe in angels. A lot of people still believe in that. I think that became popular after some movie in the 1980s or whatever. Everyone started believing in angels. I don't know if they believe in God, but they believe in angels. I have my own angel who is looking after me. Anyway, these kind of descriptions, they do not tally with the modern scientific worldview. And actually, it seems that most people in the world don't really subscribe to the modern scientific worldview, which is supposed to be the worldview that everyone subscribes to. But most people, it seems that they don't, because otherwise this Harry Potter wouldn't have become popular. If people didn't believe in the possibility of things that are not allowed in the modern scientific worldview, then Harry Potter and angels, movies about angels and all this kind of thing could have never become popular. Should have been banned as some kind of promoting unscientific ideas. However, Srila Prabhupada states, as he always does, in a very matter-of-fact kind of way, that, first of all, he says, even in those days, millions of years ago. So according to the modern scientific outlook, millions of years ago, there weren't people, and even if there might have been people, they weren't living in castles. They were running around, grunting, and hitting each other on the head with clubs from time to time. In other words, they were a little bit more sophisticated than the gorillas, but not much. However, here in the Srimad Bhagavatam is a description of civilization millions of years ago, with flying castles. Not everyone had a flying castle. Kardamuni had a flying castle. But the point is that Srila Prabhupada is, he has no reservations about stating the Vedic version. And even though, according to Pratyaksha Praman, or the evidence that we can gather with our eyes and other senses, there are no such things as flying castles. We don't have any record of flying castles. What to speak of one created by the desire of an accomplished yogi? Srila Prabhupada states it as a matter of fact, that this is what was going on millions of years ago. Of course, the yogis themselves, they don't fit the scientific evidence. There are yogis, even in the modern day, who defy scientific norms. I remember seeing on television, as in my childhood, a yogi who was put in a glass cage, I guess you could call it, which was a vacuum. And, of course, they didn't have the TV camera on him all the time because it would have been kind of boring. But he sat there for over half an hour, then they took him out. Now, human beings can't live for half an hour in a vacuum because they have to breathe. But the yogi did. And it was, of course, you had to believe the TV people that it was actually a vacuum. But then you have to believe that the scientists on all their experiments, that we have done this experiment and this is the result. And presumably if anyone doubted that the yogi was sitting in a vacuum for half an hour or whatever the time was, that if anyone doubted it strongly enough, they could attempt to see that for themselves by calling the yogi and doing whatever is required to test it for themselves. So Srila Prabhupada, he accepts the Vedic version in all respects and presents it within his Bhagavatam purports, within all his purports. And Srila Prabhupada has no qualms against in going against the way of thinking, the current of thought that is prominent in the world today. Srila Prabhupada is independent in the sense that, of course, the jiva is always dependent upon Bhagavan, who is the supreme independent. But Srila Prabhupada is independent in as much as he is not influenced by mundane thoughts. He's not influenced by the current worldview. Of course, some people have proposed that Srila Prabhupada was influenced by what they call Victorian values. However, we, meaning those who want to accept Srila Prabhupada as, according to the descriptions of Shastra, that pure devotees are guided by Krishna. Mahatma nastu mang partha daivin prakriti maashritaha. They are under the protection of the divine nature. So they live in this world and they may appear to be products of the environment in which they act, because just like in Srila Prabhupada's childhood, he went on the tram. So everyone else in Calcutta also probably went on the tram at some point in time. But that doesn't mean that because Srila Prabhupada, or he dressed in a certain way in his life prior to taking sannyas, Srila Prabhupada We see photos of him sometimes dressed in a businessman's suit, sometimes dressed in traditional Indian dress, which was common. Oh, that was the norm in India in those times. Western dress had not taken over as it has today among men almost universally and increasingly among women who otherwise... Anyway, I don't want to get too much into Indian culture. That's not the purpose here. But anyway, we may say, you see, he was just influenced by the dress codes of the people around him. No, not really. He was influenced by Krishna, but because he came in this world to execute the mission of Krishna, therefore he blended with the world in as much as was necessary to execute his mission within the world. But he didn't adopt the way of thinking of the world. He made that very clear when he first came to America. When one Ramakrishna mission sannyasi, it was some weeks or months after Srila Prabhupada came to America, when he was in New York, one Ramakrishna mission sannyasi advised him that now you're in the West, you should adopt Western ways. You have to wear Western clothing and eat with a knife and fork, and in this cold climate, meat eating is essential. Srila Prabhupada didn't accept any of that. He maintained the diet, which he had more or less the same diet to a large extent as that is he'd followed within India, and specifically he took Krishna Prasad. He maintained his clothing style with a few modifications. You'll find in the early pictures of the devotees of Krishna in the Western countries, they all wear, it's like a standard uniform that they wear this polo top sweater. Do you know what that means? Polo top sweater. It comes up like this and it falls over. I don't know why it's called polo top, and it's not that important. One of these was given to Srila Prabhupada as a gift at some point in time, and he wore it, and then that became... Everyone else thought, well, if Prabhupada's wearing it, we should wear it too. And so it became standard. But Srila Prabhupada, along with that, wore his sannyasi bahivasa and uttariya, which means this part and this part. And the Western style shoes, when Srila Prabhupada first came, he came in those, which also isn't traditional actually, plastic shoes, which were very common in India at that time. Some kind of, difficult to describe, a little pointy. That's also not true. Anyway, the point is, later on Srila Prabhupada, he wore shoes, different kinds of shoes, those made in the West. Some kind of soft slippers. So the point is that Srila Prabhupada, he chose what he wanted to do, and he adopted to Western ways somewhat, not very much. But always he was acting on behalf of Krishna. He lived in this world for the sake of communicating Krishna consciousness, but he wasn't influenced by the Western, or even for that matter by the Indian way of thinking. He was against the general way of thinking in India at that time, as today still is, that we have to make material progress. Of course, that's there all over the world, but it was very strong in India, and although previous to that, there had been a very strong ethos in India that we need to make spiritual progress. And Srila Prabhupada himself often told anecdotes which demonstrated the spiritual nature of the culture which was prominent in India previously. he told the story of one Brahmana who was living near to Krishnanagar in Bengal, who was visited by the king, local king, and the local king saw him living in what we would nowadays call abject poverty, to use a cliche. And the king offered the Brahmana something, that let me do something to help you. But the Brahmana refused. He didn't want to take charity from a king. It's very dangerous to take charity from rich people, because then you become ingratiated. The rich people, they're rich in almost all cases because they're materialistic. And materialistic means they know how to exploit people better than... I mean, everyone's trying to exploit everyone else, but those who are rich, they're pretty good at it. They're exploiting others better than the other people around them. So even when they give charity, it's not without strings, if you know that expression. Do you know what that means? It's not without any condition. They'll want to be, they'll want something, either to be praised by the Brahmin, or they'll want, of course those in the days before photographs, but they like to have their photograph taken. They're giving, people give charity, like, just like this Lions Club or Rotary Club. It's all formed so that the members of it can get some praise for their charitable activities. After exploiting people and making lots of money, then they give a little bit of it away and have their photo put in the newspaper so that they can be shown as a greatly generous person. So, the Brahmana may be obliged to, then the king may come, he may have some dispute with someone, and he may come and the Brahmana may feel obliged, well, I have to support this person because he's giving me charity. He becomes the servant. He becomes dependent upon the rich person. That was the case with Bhishma and Duryodhana also, Dronacharya, that they couldn't speak up when Draupadi challenged them. How can you sit there while I'm being insulted? Is this dharma? Obviously it was adharma. But Bhishma said, dharma is very difficult to ascertain. He started waffling because he didn't want to. He thought that I can't go against Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana because they've supported me all these days. He became I've been living in their palace and they've been maintaining me. He became compromised. He's not independent. So anyway, the Brahmana, he said, no, I don't want anything from you. Thank you very much. And the king said, well, how are you living? You know, it's just such a broken down place and nothing to eat. He said, well, my disciples, they go out and they beg a little rice every day and we have some wild vegetables growing here. We cook it with that and we're living. That's all. You'd rather live in poverty than become dependent upon the king. He maintained his independence. This is an important quality for a Brahmana. Independence, integrity. That you don't have to one doesn't change his message for the sake of flattering others, but speaks without being obliged to others. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Nirapeka na hoile dharma, what is that? Dharma na hoi rokkhane. That if one is not nirapeka, if one is not independent, if one is not on any particular side, then dharma cannot be protected. Dharma requires, for the protection of dharma, it requires persons to speak clearly and authoritatively without any personal consideration. So Srila Prabhupada maintained his independence and accepted the Vedic viewpoint and preached that, even though many, many points that Srila Prabhupada presented went against the current chintashrut, that is the term, the way of thinking of the world. Just like here, Srila Prabhupada writes, even in those days, millions of years ago. And he's just writing, taking it for granted that millions of years ago there was civilization. Whereas in the modern way of thinking, it's not accepted. They think that civilization has reached its zenith in modern Western man, especially Anglo-Saxon. But according to the Vedic version, there was civilization millions of years ago. And yogis, an accomplished yogi like Kardama Muni, can, by his desire, by the power he has obtained from performing yoga, he can manifest a castle that can fly in the sky. Not only in the sky, but from throughout space. So Srila Prabhupada is not only not cowing down, or not just saying, well, you see, well, we think that there were skyscrapers. In our opinion, you see, it's not like that, but he's challenging the... His method of writing is challenge the... You think you have your skyscrapers. Well, there were skyscrapers millions of years ago. What do you know about your little tin can skyscrapers? He's taking an aggressive position. Whereas we might take a... If we were challenged on this, we might say, well, that's why I might try and kind of hide it away and yes, not talk about it very much and... But Srila Prabhupada is saying, yeah, what do you know about skyscrapers? We had skyscrapers millions of years ago in Vedic civilization. What are your little skyscrapers that someone comes and flies a plane into and it all collapses? So we're told. So Srila Prabhupada was aggressively independent. He aggressively spoke against the modern Western civilization as a disaster, destroying the whole Western way of, or modern way of thinking, is destroying the actual purpose of human life. Jivasya tattva jignasa. Life is meant for inquiring into the nature of reality. But modern so-called civilization has got so many defects. They got it so wrong, and they're so puffed up about being right, but they got it so wrong. I mean, even in terms of human happiness, it's the worst situation even in their known history. They say now we're so advanced, but practically speaking, we see that in all these so-called unadvanced countries, when they open up to the Western way, then immediately, just like you can see in Slovenia, that immediately, or all the modern advancement, along with it comes so many social problems and moral decline, and the family breaks up, and the whole thing's a social disaster. And what's the payoff? What do you get in return? Well, you can get McDonald's, I guess, is something. And what else? You can get beer from all over the world and all these different advantages. These are the so-called advantages. And in the meantime, You know, already it was Mleccha civilization here, but it became Ati Mleccha, super Mleccha. It went from just being kind of average degraded to being super degraded. Of course, in the meantime, the further west has become super, super degraded, so you're still not as advanced or degraded, however you want to call it. So the modern society is a disaster. It's based on a colossal mistake of considering that jivasya indriya sukha jignyasa, that the life is meant for searching after happiness for the senses. It's a massive mistake, and it's a massive hoax, because it's vigorously propagated that life is meant for, well, they don't even talk about what life is meant for. They don't want people to get very philosophical. They just pump the idea that life is meant for eating McDonald's, eating in the McDonald's restaurants, and various other activities for sense gratification. So Srila Prabhupada, his books are revolutionary. Tadvag visargo janataka viplavaha. They're meant for creating a revolution in the impious lives of a misdirected civilization. This is Srila Prabhupada's translation of these words of Vyasadeva, written 5,000 years ago, and fulfilled in Srila Prabhupada's mission, that of translating the Srimad Bhagavatam without any compromise, without caring even what the Western or modern way of thinking might be. Not that Srila Prabhupada was simply dogmatic. He met with intellectuals from various walks of life, and he discussed with them in an intelligent way, not just that, well, we don't believe you, boom, finished. But he discussed in an intelligent way all these different points, and he wanted his disciples to do so also. Srila Prabhupada himself said that, I am not a scientist. He pointed out brilliantly, we have that book, Life Comes from Life, we find that Srila Prabhupada brilliantly pointed out the defects in the modern scientific way of thinking, but he wanted his disciples, those among them who had training in the modern scientific method, to do research and present in scientific terms how everything that Srila Prabhupada has presented is actually correct. That life comes from life. Life doesn't come from matter. This should be scientifically shown, that the universe cannot come into being by chance. So all these points are now becoming prominent in the scientific world. As you all know, there's a big debate in the modern scientific world over the evolution by chance versus what is called intelligent design theory, because by doing more and more research, they've found that actually it's impossible. There are so many factors required. If it's to be postulated that life has arisen by a random combination of chemicals, but there are so many factors required which were of incredible complexity, which for even one of them to come about by chance is, according to statistical probability theory, impossible. Of course, the idea is that, well, if there are enough chances, it's likely to come about. But there is, in probability, then, if the probability of something happening is 1 to the power of minus 20 million, for instance, that's considered an impossibility. It just doesn't happen. And then, if you have, but there are so many complex factors which all need to be in tune, fine-tuning at the same time. And then you get one to the power of minus 20 million times another one to the power of minus 20 million. There's about, you know, more than 100 of these factors. And even one of them to come into being by chance is impossible. And then you have more than 100 factors which all have to be in place at the same time. And therefore, scientists themselves are saying that, well, evolution, it couldn't have happened. So actually Srila Prabhupada wanted his own disciples to do this, but anyway, it's happening in science. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada, he spoke against so many of the sacred theories of modern man, just like democracy. Srila Prabhupada called it demon crazy. And people say, oh, democracy. See, that's the reason, that's the excuse that they're in Iraq, isn't it? It's for the sake of establishing democracy. You know, I'm sure the people of Iraq would have been more happy to have been harassed by Saddam Hussein than to be harassed by the various noble soldiers of the United States of America and other countries, and, you know, and not had their democracy, right? Their position is worse off than it was under Saddam, rest in peace. So, it's considered a sacred principle, but Srila Prabhupada, he pointed out so many defects in democracy. The people are voting, they have no idea what the issues are. And therefore, it appeals, the democracy, you have to appeal to the sentiments of stupid people. Because most people, I mean, not even speaking spiritually, even materially, most people, they have no idea. You talk about what are the issues? Just like the American presidential election is coming up, and there's foreign policy issues, there's economic issues, and most people, they've no idea. What are the complexities of the issues involved, and how are they going to vote? They can only vote on sentiment. That's why someone like Ronald Reagan gets in, because he's a good entertainer. He was practiced as an actor, and you have to know how to smile on the TV screen. And there's no way it's someone with an ugly mug. You know what an ugly mug is? A mug means a face. But people who have ugly faces, they're called ugly mugs. They can get elected as the president of a country, because people, he might be a very intelligent, very capable leader, but if he's not good looking, then there's no way of getting voted in. You have to be good looking, because people are attracted to those whose the skin stretched on their face looks somewhat attractive. They like that better. Skin stretched over their skull. So Srila Prabhupada spoke against democracy. He said there should be a king, absolute power. So people, they hate this idea, because, you know, we had Hitler, and we had Stalin, and we have a whole, the Western world is a history of kings who one by one got either thrown out or their powers taken away. So the saying is that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I'm sure you have that in Slovene also, is it? That saying? But Srila Prabhupada spoke of kings who were not corrupt, because they performed their kingly duties knowing that jivasya tatva jignyasa, we should live for the sake of inquiry into the Supreme Truth. They understood this principle. And therefore, just like Parikshit Maharaj or Bharat Maharaj, they gave up their kingdoms very quickly, without they were not attached to that. Not like, as Prabhupada pointed out, the modern rulers, they either have to die or you have to shoot them or something to get them out of office. They cling on to their office. So Srila Prabhupada spoke against democracy. He spoke against women's liberation, by the way. We're not supposed to talk about that nowadays, but actually he did. He spoke against the modern educational system. That he referred to the modern education as slaughterhouses. They destroy the spirit or the actual inquiring propensity, and fill the consciousness up with all kinds of bogus ideas. Not only did he speak against modern education, but he even said that most people shouldn't be educated. It's not necessary, that sounds like something. A call for a return to a primitive way of life. But Srila Prabhupada pointed out that, you see, if someone's going to be a barber, what do they need to study trigonometry for? Or Shakespeare? It's not required. And most of the people in the world are going to be barbers, or even in the modern life, bus drivers. And what is a bus driver, what is he, when he's turning the bend, he doesn't have to calculate the angle and what is the cosine and all this kind of thing. He just turns the wheel and looks out to see there's no one in the way. That's all. Doesn't need a, he can just read some pictograms, that's all. You don't need to have a pictogram, just like the signs on the road, they're pictograms. It's just like it shows a sign of a bridge. It means there's a bridge up ahead. This is supposed to be like what the ancient Egyptians or whatever, they had this kind of... According to modern theory, it was a precursor to writing. But it's all over the world. Now, what do you see? Just like you see the men's toilets and the women's toilets, they have a pictogram, isn't it? Although both men and women nowadays both wear pants, trousers, but the men's toilet has a picture of a man with, that's the man with the pants, and the woman has a skirt, something like that. So anyway, the point is that education is not required for everybody, and all this so-called advanced education. So like this, so many things that Srila Prabhupada said, they go against the sensibilities of modern man. And I'm over time now. So, as I was saying yesterday, we have to accept, if we're going to accept Srila Prabhupada at all, then sarvam etadritang manye, we have to, yanmang vadasi, we have to accept what he says. We can't take and pick and choose. That I like this bit, I don't like this bit. I accept Prabhupada was right on this, but he wasn't right on that. That means that we are placing our judgment and our intelligence above him, which is an offense. And it definitely means that we're not in the position of a disciple. We may have difficulty understanding or accepting something that he says, as we find Arjuna had difficulty in accepting and understanding some things that Krishna said. But then Arjuna asked, he wasn't shy, he said, Arjuna asked Krishna that I don't understand this, it doesn't say, and then Krishna explained it to him. And when Arjuna was fully convinced, then Krishna said, okay, let's get on with the fight. Otherwise, as Srila Prabhupada states, at the end when Krishna asks Arjuna that, okay, are you convinced? And Arjuna said, yep. Okay. And Krishna said, okay, let's go. But Prabhupada commented that if Arjuna wasn't convinced, Krishna would have been ready to speak the whole Bhagavad Gita again to him, to make him convinced. As long as he was inquiring submissively, Krishna was prepared to instruct him. But if Arjuna starts to say that, I can't accept that, that's too much, then he ceases to be a disciple. He became a disciple. Shishyaste hang shadhimang twang prapannam. I accept, I've surrendered to you, I accept you as a guru. So of course this culture isn't known in the modern world, and the modern educational system simply makes one puffed up, and everyone thinks they know so much when they know actually nothing about the real values of life. So it just produces a bunch of puffed up rascals who have no idea what the actual purpose of life is, but think that they're very intelligent, which means they're the worst possible candidates for making any advancement in spiritual life, which begins with submission to the genuine Acharya. Okay, well, this is a big topic, and I'm not going to pursue it further now. Are there any questions? Yes, please.
After what you explained about how to rule society, what is the best way to practice, suggested, what would you think if someone will give you the possibility to choose a king to rule? What advice would you give to him how to... the principles of Krishna consciousness,
what principles would we introduce? Of course, it's all highly theoretical, but you never know. Krishna can give us the whole world in, what did Prabhupada say, 18 days or something. What would we advise a king? Well, we'd have to advise according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Srila Prabhupada, when he went to meet Indira Gandhi, who you may remember was the Prime Minister of India up until about 1978 or something, when she was killed. She had two terms in office. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada went to meet her, and he had written in his notebook some points that he proposed to make to her, which he didn't at the time, because she wasn't in a mood to hear him, even though she'd given him an appointment. She was afraid of being assassinated because Mujibur Rahman in Bangladesh had just been assassinated thanks to the CIA, and she was afraid that she was the next. So she wasn't in a mood to listen. So anyway, the Prabhupada made 9 points. I can't remember them all, but some of them were that all the members of the parliament should be initiated brahmanas. And then he wanted to make her favorite son, Sanjay, the king. And she should be the mother queen. Because he didn't want to have a woman in charge, it seems. Even though she was capable in many ways, of ruling. I'm not commenting on her policies, but she was in charge, there's no doubt. She was the boss. Then Prabhupada said, no public meat eating at home. Then he said that Bhagavad Gita should be made the national scripture, I can't remember, chanting in every home. Slaughterhouses closed. These were some of the policies. Slaughterhouses closed, yeah. So these were some of the policies that Prabhupada wanted to institute. So what we read in Prabhupada's books, meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, that should be stopped. How to practically do it? Well, I can't say. I haven't studied this very deeply, and you'd have to see according to the situation, but it seems like Prabhupada wanted to institute it all at once. It is a difficult question how to institute all these things in the age, in the nuclear age. Anyway, it is highly theoretical at the present time, but we should be ready to give advice to heads of state. That's what brahmanas used to do. The kings would find the best brahmanas in their kingdom and call them to their court to be the ministers. I heard that Veera Chandra, he was in Osijek. He's in Macedonia. He's advisor to the president or something like that, I was told. Dangerous. I mean, if you don't advise him to stop the sinful activities in the kingdom, it's better not to be the advisor. But the modern presidents or heads of state, they can't do this because they rely on the citizens' votes. But actually they should be telling the citizens what to do, not round the other way. It's a different approach altogether. The citizens are supposed to be controlled. Just like there's a lot of protest about Prabhupada saying that women should be controlled and they shouldn't be independent. But actually, all the citizens are controlled except the brahmanas, who they're not exploiting others, so they don't need to be controlled. Otherwise, they're all controlled, and even the brahmanas within the family system, everyone's controlled. A man may be married with children, but he has to follow the order of his father. So it's just a matter. Everyone is within the Vedic system. There's a lot of control over people. There's not that much. This idea of independence in the modern age, you can say anything, do anything, you can walk around more than half naked, and you can insult anyone you like. It's not allowed. The whole concept of society was different. It's society, life is meant for God realization, and then the society should be set up towards that aim, and to save people from degrading themselves. So control is needed. You just can't buy meat, and you can't. Women can't just go independently, and then they can just, you know, be free to offer themselves or be exploited by others. No. Control is needed, otherwise the tendency to exploit becomes the norm of civilization, it becomes the predominating factor within society, which we see at the present time. People have freedom to indulge in their senses and exploit others. Okay, so shall we finish there? Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.